Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Alan Pittman, Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and Administration and Chief Human Capital Officer at the VA. Also joining us in our conversation is Solly Thomas, Associate Partner in IBM's Human Capital Practice. Alan, could you elaborate on the four-part HR consulting model that you and your team have recently rolled out, and how does it frame your human capital strategy?
Well, to give you just a little bit of background, first of all, VA, unfortunately, over the years, has not kept up as far as leading-edge technology or actually systems from a people perspective within the VA. And you might understand why. Is VA is mostly known for health care and also veterans benefits. So therefore, when the budget comes through from an appropriation standpoint, it's typically for health care and benefits administration, plus our national cemeteries, of course. So when you talk about overhead, which we are, it's very difficult to get those dollars that are necessary to move forward. What we've done since I've been there is to identify what we need to be within the future. So we're going through an HR transformation process. And I will tell you something that I think is somewhat funny. When I first came here and did an assessment of VA from a human resources perspective, I mapped out what I thought needed to be done before we sat down and did a collaborative strategic plan as far as human capital plan is concerned. Turns out that it matches the president's management agenda. And I would prefer to say that the president is following my lead, but it's not. As it turns out, it's a pretty good fit. And this is not rocket science when you look at human resources. If you look at the fact that fundamentally you're a personnel organization, a personnel department, even though we're 235,000 strong, then you soon see what we must do. And automation is almost non-existent at the VA. We have a payroll system that has a component for human resources in it. So taking a look at where we need to move from where we are today to where we're going to in the future and the people involved and how do we get there, how do we transform ourselves? And a lot of it has us moving from a personnel transaction-based organization to a human resources consulting behavioral-based organization. But you also need to have the tools that allow you to do that. We went through that process and soon realized that if we're going to become a consulting organization, then what do we need to subscribe to? And you mentioned the four-step consulting model. Well, it includes the focus on customer needs, exploring solutions, developing and executing action plans, and closing the loop with our HR practitioners, but also the line managers that they work with. So what we're trying to do is take those four components and develop core competency training programs so we can create an organization that is a consulting organization. We have a three-year plan in reference to that training and development piece as far as human resources and the human resources professionals are concerned. A lot of it is contingent also upon automation.
You talk about this transition. Could you elaborate a little bit more on the VA's plan to transition to an HR line of business? And how does this move factor into your strategy, which you talked about, of moving your HR function to a more consultative and less transactional focus?
Well, if one understands, if you're a personnel transaction-based organization, and I'll give you an example of that. Within the federal government, there's a Form 52, which is actually a change of status for an employee that's filled out typically by either the supervisor or human resources, and it's a paper form, and that's the way we do it at VA. Understanding that that's a transaction itself, and then also understanding that our survey has shown us that approximately 36% to 42% of our HR professionals are transaction-based tasks, then you can see just how much labor is taken to in order to move an individual from one slot to another to perform any function within human resources. So just imagine if we automated those functions, then wouldn't that give us more capacity without even adding staff? And that is our strategy right there. We want to automate, thus increasing capacity of our human resources professional to allow them to do consulting without adding FTE. In order to do that, that's where the HR line of business comes into play. Pretty much tells us where we need to go, and that's even better. Why? Because we don't have to build it. The HR line of business goes through a process through OPM, and OPM goes through the due diligence process of not only creating the project teams that represent all the departments and agencies within the federal government, to be able to select, going through a due diligence process, of who can perform these functions from a transaction-based piece. Most people call these organizations service centers. So a service center can offer, for example, classification. What we're doing is buying that service from either another agency, and the agencies that have been identified within the federal government have been identified, and there's four that meet the criteria we need from a human resource information standpoint. However, at the same time, OMB is going through a process of due diligence as far as the private sector is concerned, allowing them the opportunity also to become service center operators. So we're waiting for that one aspect to be complete. But by utilizing a human resource information system, this allows us to go into the database. And the database, in this respect, comes from a personnel file. Once we automate that personnel file, the official personnel file, then this human resource information system, an automated system, can reach down into that database and pull out all these various aspects of an employee. And that will help us in managing our workforce.
Alan, I want to talk a little bit about performance management. I want to know if you could elaborate on the VA's five-tier performance management system and your experience implementing the performance appraisal plans. In particular, I'm interested in hearing what kind of findings, what your experience was under your performance management beta site.
Well, most people are unaware of this. There's an awful lot of publicity in reference to Department of Defense and Homeland Security and the issues they're having in trying to implement a five-tier performance appraisal system, which is absolutely crucial to performance planning. VA is the second largest agency and department within the federal government, 235,000 strong. All 235,000 employees are on a five-tier system. We had that ratified by the union 6 months ago. We worked with our union partners to get that. That was an essential piece. If we didn't do that, other than our senior executive service, who is on a five-tier system already, and that's through approximately 300 of our executives, if we didn't have a five-tier system, we'd still be on a pass-fail system. Now, the pass-fail system doesn't bode well for lots of different reasons. If you and I, Sully, for example, are in the same classification, the same job title, and we perform the same work, and you receive a pass and I receive a pass, but you work extremely hard and I work just enough to get a pass, then who can the supervisor and who should the supervisor invest in from a training and development standpoint for the future to support the succession plan and also strategies of the VA? If the investment goes into you, I have every right to raise my hand and say, how come you're not investing in me? I also have a pass. We need to be able to distinguish between the levels of performance to give us a determination of who, from a career path and career progression standpoint, is going to move forward. Also, who needs development? How can we invest those very valuable and scarce resources, dollars, that we get from the Congress to invest in you? So from a five-tier system, we started this process just this last 6 months, with the exception of the senior executive service. So we have gone out and we've tested it. We've implemented it in all parts of the country. We're writing up the objectives as we speak now that align with incentives, the incentives being defined as the strategies of the VA, strategies of the organization, and also the objectives of the individual. So we can have measurable metrics that will afford us the opportunity to move people through the system based upon performance. Now, the experience we have has been short-lived other than the senior executive service. We've piloted this program, and it's worked extremely well. We had approximately three VISNs. VISNs are integrated systems within VHA, so it's Veterans Information and Integrated Service Network. That's what a VISN is. So we've done that. It's worked extremely well. Now we're doing a wholesale rollout in reference to the five-tier performance appraisal system. Unfortunately, we don't have that much experience to speak to.
Now, you mentioned that you worked with the unions. I'm sure they raised some concerns at the outset. How did you address those concerns?
Well, I speak very openly and short and to the point. If I'm asked a question, I'll answer the question. Obviously, if there's a confidential situation, I'll explain it's confidential and can't explain it. But in talking with the unions, I've been very, very clear about their relationship. When I first came into the VA, I read the Master Agreement when in reference to the American Federation of Government Employees Master Agreement, and saw that it was a pro-union master contract. In talking with the unions, I expressed that. And I said, what we need to do is not create a pro-management agreement, but to create one that's equitable for not only the unions, but also for management, which would impact, obviously, positively the employees. It's very, very difficult to manage an employee, the human capital asset, if, in fact, if you can't do it directly. And if you have to give 30 days notice every time you do something, whether it's a salary increase or whether it's a performance appraisal or et cetera. And that's what we talked about. We talked about how we could collaboratively develop a master agreement to allow us the opportunity to manage the employees for the benefit of the veterans that we serve. Otherwise, we're too restrictive right now. In addition to that, I did talk about the fact that, you know, there's a trend within the private sector in particular that unions are becoming more and more minimized. And there's an opportunity to work with us in a partnership to develop an equitable plan, an equitable agreement to allow them to participate properly in the future. You know, I talked about performance planning. Their concern was performance planning, that when there is an issue, whether it's positive or negative, but typically negative, then there's not a performance plan in place that allows the employee in a good faith effort to turn around and to continue employment. We have a philosophy of VA. I have a philosophy of VA. It's our job to retain an employee. It's not our job to separate an employee. It's difficult enough bringing someone on board, so why not keep them? So through a performance plan request that they had as far as negotiations are concerned, I said absolutely. That's what supervisors are supposed to do. Again, some of the very basic elements of labor management relations that should have been there were not there. We're creating that.
How is VA transforming how it manages its workforce? We will ask Alan Pittman, Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and Administration and Chief Human Capital Officer at the VA, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.